Oh, the idea of Antarctica was born maybe 10 years ago. It was a dream for me, and I worked all my career to realize this dream. The Arctic World Tour was maybe the final test, you know, the final adventure before going to Antarctica, because I was in the Arctic for 44 days completely alone, and I try to train for everything that I will experience in Antarctica. So driving a fat bike, pushing a pulk, keeping everything with me, and sleeping in a tent at minus 30, minus 40 degrees, for example, in Greenland. So the Arctic World Tour was the final test for Antarctica.
Sejam muito bem-vindos a mais um episódio aqui do podcast Maré Sonora. Como vocês sabem, eu sou Marina Guedes, a sua produtora, apresentadora e criadora aqui do Maré Sonora, para trazer mais um bate-papo inspirador e emocionante. O convidado da vez é um italiano chamado Omar Di Felice. E a nossa conversa foi gravada em inglês, então para ouvir o bate-papo traduzido com legenda automática, acesse o Maré Sonora através do canal no YouTube e lá você seleciona legenda e escolhe o idioma que quiser conferir. Welcome everyone to Maré Sonora podcast. As you are used to, Maré Sonora means resonant tide in English. It's a show with inspiring stories from people all over the world. And today, for the third time, I will have an Italian on board the show. But because my Italian is not fluent enough, we decided to speak in English. So thank you so much, Omar Di Felice, for being here today. It's a real pleasure to have you on board.
Hi, Marina, and thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure for me also.
Where are you speaking from now, Omar? Where exactly are you?
Now I'm in Bormio, in the Italian Alps region, as I am training for my next extreme adventure in Antarctica.
Awesome. How cold is it up there now?
It's not too much cold, but summer is turned quickly into the fall, finally, because we experienced a very warm September and mid of October, and now the temperature is lowering a lot. And today morning was something like 5 to 10 Celsius degrees, so it's colder than where you are now, I think.
Yeah, I'm very close to Rome. I don't know if you know, it's a small paesino called Belmonte, but very close to Rieti, is in the province of Rieti. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know. That area is one of my training area when I am in Rome.
Oh, okay, for the inclination you train here. Because of the inclination.
Yeah. There are a lot of climbs and not too much traffic, and so it's a good area to train.
Omar, normally I prefer, instead of presenting the guest, I think it's nicer to hear a self-presentation. If you can talk about yourself briefly for anyone out there who is listening to us, who doesn't know you, what could you tell about yourself?
Oh, I can tell you that I'm a cyclist, an ultra cyclist. So I do the extreme cycling. That is that kind of cycling that go beyond the standard one. So long distances races and adventures and long crossing, like, for example, the Transamerica or the Himalaya Traverse or something like the Arctic World Tour. And all the adventures and the races that I've done in the last 10 years.
And how did you start? How did you choose to do what you do? Who inspired? Did anybody inspire you in particular? How did you decide to be one?
Oh, I fell in love with cycling when I was a baby, looking at the TV, the Marco Pantani, the famous Italian climber. And so I started doing the normal cycling. And I had also 1 year as professional in 2007. And then I turned into the ultra cycling. That is maybe is more about myself, about my limits, and about a challenge with my own.
You were born in Rome. Are you from Rome originally, or?
Yeah, originally I'm from Rome, and I was born there. But you know, I live maybe everywhere because with my bike I used to go everywhere, and I pass all the year from race to adventures in Italy and outside Italy. So I don't pass too much time in Rome right now.
I remember the first time I saw you was during the press conference of the Apennino bike tour, because you were the person who were doing like the consultancy, like checking as a professional cyclist, telling how efficient and giving like a professional eye on the track. I remember you were there. It was the first time I saw you, but we didn't speak. I was just watching and practicing my Italian, but I was interested because of the track through pretty much cutting the whole Italy, right?
Yeah, the Apennino bike tour is a bike path that want to merge all the roads along the Apennini mountains. Apennini mountains are not so famous like the Alps, you know, but maybe it's a very pleasant area from Liguria, from the north of Italy to the southern part, from Liguria to Sicily. Mm-hmm. So it's possible to cycle most of time alone with not too much traffic. And I am one of the promoters of the Apennino bike tour, and I'm also the technician that worked on the path, tracking the route, trying to spread the word about this fantastic bike path, because I think that we can improve our way to travel by cycling, mm-hmm. because now, you know, with bikepacking, there are a lot of people that are interested on doing holidays on a bike. So I think that the Apennino bike is one of the best parts in Italy where you can cycle.
If you had to pick a part, because it's like a 3,500 kilometer long, right? Do you have a preference, a favorite spot during this track?
It's a 3,000. The entire route is 3,300 kilometers, more or less. But you can choose maybe a region, or you can choose just a part. And there are 44 stages. Villages, so you can choose to ride just a part of it. In my opinion, you know, the north of Italy is very famous for cycling, but we must discover more and more the southern one. I think that Sicily and then also Calabria are very, very iconic region for cycling. You can experience good weather and also good food, and also good, very good people, because there are a lot of people that are very accommodating with you. So I can invite people to discover more the south of Italy.
And you know the region, Omar, up north, a beautiful touristic region, the Dolomites, the area. Have you probably been there many, many times? Do you have any suggestions about tracks or information, resources for anyone out there wishing to explore the region on a bike in that part of Italy?
I think that Dolomites are very famous. So if you go to Dolomites, you can experience a lot of very popular track, something like the Sella Ronda, or also the Maratona de Dolomiti route. Or you can just open your Komoot account and just explore the region, because there are a lot of routes, as it's very popular. It's a very popular region in Italy for cycling.
Jumping directly into your next challenge, your next adventure. Here on the podcast, normally we talk about Antarctica, normally related to science or photography or also sailing. But it's going to be the first time that we talk about Antarctica related to bike. So could you tell us what's going to be your next challenge and really, really cool adventure to come up very, very soon?
Yeah, and maybe also is the first time that we can speak about cycling in Antarctica, because it's the first time that a cyclist try to do this. Maybe not the real first one, but there are just a pair of attempts, and just one person reached the South Pole, just ski and cycling in a mixed mode, in a mixed way. But if I can reach my goal, I will be the first cyclist to complete the crossing of Antarctica solo, unsupported. So it will be a very challenging project, It's called Antarctica Unlimited. It's something like 1,600 kilometers, more or less. And I will pass, of course, through the South Pole. I will start next month in November, and from the Hercules Inlet, west part of Antarctica, it's from the coastline. Then I will try to reach, first of all, the South Pole. I go to the Leverett Glacier and then back to the South Pole. It will be very challenging because it's Antarctica is a very remote area of the planet. Maybe it's the most inaccessible and remote and wild and cold region of the world. And you are there, you are really, really alone. You have to manage everything by yourself. You can't call anyone. So maybe it's the most extreme adventure that a cyclist can do.
And you tried last year, right? More or less the same time. I remember I was going to go on a sailing trip, and you're going in the same time, but we're going to completely different logistics, of course. And then you had an issue. You had to abort the trip. I have to say I'm very curious to ask you. I don't know if you can tell us or not. What exactly happened that made you to decide? I remember reading your post that you shared. You said something that your mind cannot be focused if you have a problem. So you decided it was reasonable enough to go back. What exactly happened? Is it possible to ask you?
Yes, I can tell you maybe more general than specific. But the most important things is that I had some personal problem at home. So my mind wasn't so focused on what I was doing. And I was in Antarctica with a buddy, but I was at home with my mind. So after 10 days, I decided to come back home because I wasn't able to go over. Because when you try to do this kind of adventures, you have to keep very focused on what you are doing. You must be 100% on what you are doing. You can't have any distraction, any problems, any issues out of the adventure. So this is why I took the decision. It wasn't an easy decision, but it's the only one that I can took in that conditions.
You were connected with land, I mean with the rest of the world. Are you going to use the same sort of structure? Are you going to be sending information and receiving, or have you decided not to be aware of what's happening outside this time? What's your plan this trip, Omar?
It's not easy to manage this kind of things because, you know, it's a very long adventures. It will keep me something like 65 to 70 days. And imagine to unplug everything from your heart and your mind for a so long period. So for this time, I decided to receive news from home, but with some filters. And I decided to receive just some infos, but not everything. And I will try to be more isolated than in past, for sure.
I was very curious about your bike, because I heard it's a fat bike. What can you tell me about the devices? Because you're going to be carrying everything from your tents to your food. What is your bike like and everything else?
It's a fat bike. It's a special one with a steel frame. We use the steel because we need to face cold conditions. And for sure, a steel frame set is better than the carbon with so-called conditions. And I have to attach also pulk to the bike because I have to carry with me something like 80 to 90 kilos at the start because I have to keep with me all the foods and then all the equipment and then all the devices and then all the clothes, the tent, the sleeping bag, and the stoves. So, you know, it's a lot of things to carry with me. And at the start time, I will have something like 80 to 90 kilos of weight. And then day by day, I will lose weight because I will eat something. So, you know, I will be lighter.
How cold did you get last year? What was the coldest temperature you had down south?
Last time at the start, the temperature was something like minus 20 degrees Celsius. But Going up to the South Pole, I will expect something like minus 30 to minus 40 and down. Because the South Pole is at 2,800 meters, is not flat. So it's not on the sea level. So going up to the South Pole, I will experience colder conditions.
Regarding the landscape itself, you're going to be cycling through sort of a not steep area, are you? Like, what is the landscape looking like where you're going to pass through?
The steepest part is the first one, because you start from the coastline and then you have to climb immediately at 700 to 800 meters on the sea level in the first 40 kilometers. So it's not a steep climb, because it's not something like Mortirolo or Stelvio or Terminillo climbs, but it's with the snow, with the fat bike, with the pulk and everything, it will be hard to face the first hill. And the first hill is in the first 40 kilometers.
I was imagining, because normally when you are in a cold place, you have to eat more to keep yourself warm or to keep yourself healthy enough. How does it work for you, Omar? How much do you eat a day? How does it work in terms of your feeding part of your project?
My consumption is something like 500,000 calories per day. This is what I'm working on, and it's not easy, because you know you have to plan every details, and you have to carry with you exactly what you will eat. But you know, in 70 days, maybe a day you can be more hungry than another one, but you can't eat more, because you have to save. And what you eat today, if today you eat something that is for tomorrow, then tomorrow you don't have to eat. So it's a very difficult and hard work, this one, and maybe it's the most difficult part.
And what do you eat? What kind of stuff are you taking to eat? I have no idea what you eat in those circumstances.
I have something like the dehydrated food most of all. That is something like the one that use the astronauts in the International Space Station. So I used to melt the snow to have the water, and then I put the water in the warm water in the food, and then I have pasta, I have chicken, I have rice, and so on.
When you came back last year, were you desperate to eat what? What was your first wish to eat? Especially because you were Italian. I imagine you miss proper Italian homemade food, right? What would you missing most?
the thing that I miss most in Italy is when I was out for this kind of adventure is pizza and ice cream. These things are my favorite ones.
And what was the first one you had when you came back for the first trial?
I didn't remember very well, because it wasn't an easy period when I came back home. Maybe it was pizza, but I don't remember very well.
On your story, on your experiences before, your prior experiences, you did a tour around the Arctic. And then you decided to do this one in Antarctica. Did you decide this one in Antarctica when you were cycling above the Arctic Circle, or how did you come up with the idea?
Oh, the idea of Antarctica was born maybe 10 years ago. It was a dream for me, and I worked all my career to realize this dream. The Arctic World Tour was maybe the final test, you know, the final adventure before going to Antarctica. Because I was in the Arctic for 44 days completely alone, and I try to train for everything that I will experience in Antarctica. So driving a fat bike, pushing a pulk, keeping everything with me, and sleeping in a tent at minus 30, minus 40 degrees, for example, in Greenland. So the Arctic World Tour was the final test for Antarctica.
When you were doing that tour, I didn't understand very well the logistics. Like, you were cycling, but you said you went to a part of Russia and then Greenland. Did you actually fly over to get to these places? How did you work exactly, Omar? I was just curious about these details.
Yeah. I fly from country to country, because, you know, there is the sea, so it wasn't possible to cycle on the sea. Mm-hmm. And I used some flights to pass from country to country.
And did you use the same sort of bike or did you adapt for Antarctica?
I used a prototype of the fat bike because we were developing the fat bike for Antarctica during the Arctic World Tour. So I used the prototype, and then once I was back at home, we realized the final version of the fat bike that you can see in Antarctica.
Ah, okay. And you also have had some help with all the suits you're wearing, right? Because you have to have a special gear to keep you warm, not only the food, right?
I have a special jacket and special pants from Win. We realized something like, it's something like the ones that the alpinist uses at the Everest in winter. But it's more specific to cycle, because when you cycle, you have to be able to move the legs and then to move on the bike. So it's a special one that Win realized for me.
Comparing the first one that you tried last year, have you made any changes and big changes for this one? Using the 10 days that you had as an experience, did you decide to do any changes?
I just decided to change the tent. We worked on a model that is stronger than the one that I used in the first attempt, because of the very, very strong winds, and maybe because in Antarctica sometimes you have to pass 1, 2, 3 days in a row in a tent. So I need a different one, and this is why this year I will bring with me a different model.
And you're flying from Rome to Ushuaia, or what's going to be your logistic plan?
The logistic plan is to fly to Punta Arenas in Chile. And then from Punta Arenas, I will have 1 week of quarantine, because, you know, you must go to Antarctica without any kind of health issues. And then after a week, I will fly to the Union Glacier Base Camp. And maybe, I hope, according with the weather, in a couple of days, I will start my journey, my adventure through Antarctica. Maybe I will start from the base on 12 to 13 of November.
And you fly with the aircraft from which country's base? Which help do you have? How does it work with these? Normally, there is like a scientific base that gives logistic support. Who is helping you to arrive on the continent?
To arrive on the continent, I will use the services provided by AILE, that is Antarctic Logistic Expedition Agency.
Ah, okay.
Is specific for this kind of activities. Okay. They manage the logistics also for some scientific groups and for athletes like me, or like skiers or other person.
When you talk about this project, this idea, do you recall any funny feedback you got from somebody? Like, I imagine the reactions of the people when you present your project. Can you share any funny situation or anything that you remember during these moments?
I think that people doesn't trust too much on this kind of adventure, because they doesn't trust on the fact that the cyclist can reach the South Pole and then cross Antarctica. But this one is, for me, is a challenge. So in case I will realize it, it will be maybe the bigger achievement of my life. So I will be very happy about it. But in case I won't be able to do, it's trying to go out of the comfort zone. So it's just an attempt for me. It's just to push, to understand if there is a limit for me or not, if I will be able or not, if it's possible or not. Maybe this attempt will go better than the previous. I hope so, or maybe not. I don't know. But the most important thing is that it will be an experience, an adventure. So once at home, I will have a story to tell about.
I was watching an interview of you to an Italian channel, and you mentioned that it's not only the sfida, the challenge, but also knowing yourself more and doing something towards the conservation ecosystem and so on. Normally when you do this, it's not only for the challenge itself, right? There's something more.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not about geographic exploration, because everything in the world was explored and was discovered yet. It's about exploration of my limits. It's about knowing better about me. It's to prove myself in a so remote and extreme places. So it's maybe it's a really personal challenge.
And in this project particularly, there is a scientific branch, right, Omar? You also, because you call bike to 1.5, can you explain a little bit more about it, on this side of the project?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I launched the project called the Bike to 1.5. It's a project to raise awareness on the climate change, and I use my adventures to speak with scientists and to talk with the people using my channels to raise awareness on it. And there is also a project in the school where I tell my stories, where I discuss with the guys about the climate change and the climate crisis. And you know, when you cycle, you can see the world without any kind of filters. And if you are not a stupid, you can see the climate change all around you. And this is why I try to mix the science and sport, to let the science talk in an easy way using my adventures. I was also at the COP26 in Glasgow with my bike, and then I did the Arctic World Tour interviewing some scientists and technicians and experts on climate change. And also, after the Antarctica, I will come back with some data about the climate change. I have a collaboration with the European Space Agency that is helping me on tracing the route, but also presenting me some data on how the climate is changing, affecting the Antarctica. So it's not only sport, it's also, I think, a social project.
And I was thinking, while you're talking, when you were doing the Arctic World Tour, how was your contact with local wildlife, for example? When you were cycling, did you get to see a lot of interesting wildlife, or was more like a distance on that part?
Oh, no. In the Arctic, I found some animals and a lot of wildlife, like wolves, Arctic foxes, and also reindeer, and fortunately not polar bear. And it's quite different from the Antarctica, where I won't find any kind of wildlife, because I would be completely alone. And maybe it's easier by this kind of point of view.
And you have a lot of very, very nice footages, like drone footages. Who does that for you? Like talking again about the Arctic tour, did you have any like a technical support, or how did you make those images for those trips?
Oh, 100% of the images are taken by myself during these adventures, and also in Antarctica, I will be completely alone. I will bring with me a drone, a mirrorless camera, and some action cam, and then I try, as in the Arctic, to tell the story also with images. I'm very passionate for the photography. I did some courses, so it's maybe it's also a way to invest your time, because during this kind of adventure, you spend a lot of time completely alone, and you have to find something to do more than cycling, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering if you take any, I mean, you cannot take books, but you take like a Kindle or whatever, so you can read in the days that you're going to be in the tent, not able to cycle. Do you take that as well or not?
Yeah, the Kindle is one of the things that I can have, I must have in my bags. I can't go in a journey without my Kindle, because I can read some books. I really love reading books, so I will have the Kindle with me, and it's the same model since I started this career, so I'm very, it's very important for me, this Kindle.
And I saw you've been training in Sardinia, right? Recently, as a preparation for your trip. How did it help you? What was the highlight of that experience, Omar?
Yeah, I was in Sardinia last week to do the last long ride for Antarctica. I used Sardinia for two reasons. First one is, of course, to have a long distance ride. I cycled something like 33 hours nonstop, doing 800 kilometers with 4,000 meters of elevation gain. But the most important thing is that the Sardinia was a really relaxing area. So I spent also some days at the beach. I try to relax and I try to fight against the stress that I have just before a so important adventure. So it was training, but also relaxing.
And do you have a sort of a goal? Per day you were thinking about doing how many kilometers, or it depends on the... Talking about Antarctica now, like, do you have any project related to a proper plan, like how many...
Last year I started with a specific plan, but the plan go away just some days before the start because the bad weather. So I lose a lot of time for the flight. Then I waste time at the base camp. Then I started and I waste a lot of time spending hours and hours stuck in the tent. So this year, I don't want to make a specific plan. I just want to keep going. When the weather will be good, I will try to cycle as much as I can. And when the weather will be bad, I will stay in the tent, just trying to recover, to rest, and to keep my mind and my body ready for better times. So I just want to change my approach and to be more relaxed than the first attempt.
Anyone who follows you or your social medias and see your fight trying to make the activity of cycling, urban cycling, more inclusive as possible. Like, you have a very strong concern about the importance of re-changing, like resetting a way people should think about the cities and use the cities. And you mentioned stuff happening in France, how in Italy is rather difficult, some things. You are very concerned about talking it out aloud, right, Omar?
Yeah, honestly, I think that crossing Antarctica will be easier than trying to change everything in Italy related to the traffic and to the urban cycling. The situation in Italy is very bad. I have to admit that it's not easy because we risk a lot when we cycle on the roads because people are too much affected by the automotive and the cars, and they don't want to move in a different way in the cities. So it's a fight. It's a real fight. And every day a cyclist or a pedestrian death on the road. So it's a very important fight for me, and we are trying to change something, but it's a long, long, long work, maybe longer than crossing Antarctica.
How can people follow up on your adventure in Antarctica, and how can people know more about your next trip, Omar?
Yeah, for sure. I will have a social media manager once I will be in Antarctica because I won't be able to post directly, so I will call my social media manager or send him or her a text message and maybe a compressed picture. So on my social media, both Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, it's possible to follow the adventure. But also on a map, I will share the link of the live map where people can show 24 hours per day my real-time position. So there will be a lot of coverage of my adventure, and I will try to tell the story as much as I can.
And apart from the challenge itself, what is your biggest motivation when you think about a new project and you're wishing to overcome that? What do you have in your thoughts to keep you going in such a harsh condition sometimes?
Oh, you know, I am doing as a job my biggest passion. So this one is maybe the most important motivation for me. Because when I'm tired or when I want to come back or when I was to stop, when I want to stop, I just think about I'm doing what I love more, and then I find motivation to go over.
And I was thinking about your previous experiences. How do you think of cycling? You also reached the Everest base camp, right? You went on a bike.
Couple of years ago, yeah.
But you chose a rather difficult in the winter, right? You always choose a.
I love to do difficult things. I don't want to do something that everyone can do. So, yeah, I reached the Everest base camp in winter, and winter is my favorite season as well, you know. And so sometimes when I try to find a place or maybe a challenge or a goal, I try to find it in the most difficult season of the year, that is the winter for me.
So, how do you think, Omar, these experiences in the Arctic, sorry, or in Asia, in the Himalaya, or any other that you had before, how do you think they can be helpful for your upcoming challenge? Thank you so much for listening to another episode here on podcast Maré Sonora. If you want to check out the entire conversation, please send me an email to the following email address, podcastmaresonora@gmail.com, and I will inform you how to participate and get access to the exclusive content. The link is also in the show notes explaining a bit how it works. Basically, you must make a donation of the value you decide, and I'll send you right after through an email as well, the link so you can check it out on YouTube. I hope to hear from you soon, and until then, fair winds to all of you. Muito obrigada por chegar até aqui em mais um episódio do podcast Maré Sonora. E para ouvir tudo até o final, o caminho é o seguinte: apoie aqui o canal através de uma doação pela chave Pix podcastmariasonora@gmail.com. A partir de R$ 1, isso mesmo, menos que um cafezinho, você já ajuda muito e pode conferir o episódio completo. Eu te envio por e-mail, basta você colocar na mensagem do Pix qual episódio quer ouvir e o seu e-mail. Em até um dia, eu te envio o link para você conferir pelo YouTube. Se você não mora no Brasil ou não usa o Pix, a solução é participar aqui do canal através da campanha na plataforma Catarse. Acesse o site www.podcastmariasonora.com e confere lá na seção Apoie. Lá você vai ver também o nome de todos os apoiadores, a quem eu agradeço demais. E as instruções para participar aqui e conferir mais um episódio muito especial. A gente se encontra então no próximo episódio, daqui a 15 dias, e eu desejo a todos, como sempre, ótimos ventos. Valeu!